Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/BehindTheRacketPod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now,
hey everybody, this is Mike Cation coming to you from a rainy Remington Tennis Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Don't have all my normal equipment, so you're going to have to move it. Wanted to just say this is an interview I did with JJ Wolf on Monday. He then suffered a first round loss to his good friend Alex Kovacevic. We just talked a little bit about that. Again, it was before the match. No Noah with us this week. He's in the process of moving. Couldn't join us for this one, but hope you enjoy this interview with former Ohio State Buckeye J.J. Wolf.
This has been a long time coming that we've finally been able to sit down and chat. I appreciate your time. I want to make sure for our listeners, we are doing this Monday morning here in Little Rock before you play this week, so whatever happens this week happens. You chose not to play the clay.
Yep.
In Europe. Explain why and what your thought process was.
You know, this year, still building year for me. I've played more tournaments this year than I have in a full year in the past. So I came home, I was a little weary after, I think it was, I don't know, maybe 8 weeks on the road, which might not be a lot for other guys, but for me, it's
that's a lot for anyone,
away.
JJ.
I talked to Jason Kubler over there, and he's like, you know, they're away for months.
Right, yes.
So then I start feeling like a wimp. But yeah, just, you know, I got home. I was sick for a couple days, didn't get training in, and then we're looking at it, we're like, we'd just go over there for French qualies, you know, there's no guarantee, so we made the decision to stay home and train and work on some things and keep trying to improve my game. It wasn't easy. I really wanted to go play, but I could see the logic, and I could trust my advisors, so.
It's you've always been an interesting one to me, and I mentioned I wanted to bring up the French first because I've known you since you were about 18. You were first playing at Ohio State, and obviously I was at Illinois at the time as their public address announcer in whatever role I did there. And you just had this this confidence and belief in yourself that it was even evident as I was just able to kind of see you casually. Where does that come from for you? I know how important your family has always been with you, but where does that confidence and self-belief, where did that start?
Yeah, I think it just came from playing a bunch of sports. You know, I think if I just, you know, played tennis, I could have gotten in my head a little bit. And there's a lot of losing in this sport. So playing some other sports and doing a lot of winning, I think probably helped that. But yeah, you know, just try to treat everyone with respect and walk with your head high, and maybe that gives off a little more confidence than I have. I don't know.
Your family has been so important for you. I've gotten to meet your parents and your sister as well. What kind of structure did they provide for you as you were growing up, not just on the tennis side, but just in terms of just, again, just that growth for you as a person?
Yeah, everything was always be respectful first. You know, if they told you to do something, they expected it to be done. Always respect to my parents. Even my sister would always claim that I'm older than you have to listen to me kind of deal. But yeah, on the court, off the court, a lot of stuff was kind of competition based, made it fun, but walking off any sports field, I wasn't scared to get in the car or anything. I knew we were going to get in the car and be able to talk about it and go over what I did well and didn't do well. We're always just trying to get better. Same with school. Mm. Get home, we go over my tests and stuff like that. So
that was less fun, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. But it was always kind of a team effort. Everything we did, we kind of did together.
And everybody in your family, it seems like everybody played some sport at a high level, right?
Right.
Like basketball, you have uncles. Like, tell me about this whole family, and I mean, if you can.
Yeah, so it kind of started with on my dad's side, my grandpa, he played basketball, baseball, and football at Notre Dame after World War II, and then got into some baseball.
Okay.
Played in the minors for a little bit in the Reds organization, and then got into college basketball coaching, and then he was the head coach for the Pistons and the Royals. So he actually started playing tennis in his 50s.
Okay.
I think one of my dad has five brothers.
Okay.
And one of the brothers had a ear infection, so they couldn't swim in the summer.
Okay.
So they went and just started hitting the tennis ball around, and that's kind of how they would do,
yeah,
you know, basketball year-round besides the summer, and then they'd play tennis.
I think it was your sister who posted on Instagram, like, all of the family connections and where everybody played. And I imagine, was there that level of expectation that you were going to be a high-level athlete when you were 10, 11? Was that kind of expected of you, or just kind of, how did that develop?
I think myself, all my cousins, everyone, it was just like what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
You saw everyone else in the family. I had cousins that were a good amount older than me. We'd be going to their basketball games, their volleyball matches, all of that. So it was just, there wasn't really anything else. We didn't really think, you know, there was another option. I think everyone in our family is pretty well-rounded.
Yeah.
But I had two cousins that were boys that were my same age, one a little bit older, one a little bit younger.
Okay.
So it was, you know, everyone got to push each other a little bit, and all the family reunions, it was, we went to church and we'd come back, play some basketball, play some football, play some baseball, whatever, kind of get to see where everyone's at, you know, who can jump the highest, who can run the fastest, stuff like that. But we're a very close family.
Yeah.
And, both sides, really, my mom's side as well. My uncle played, soccer and boxed at Notre Dame. My mom played tennis at Miami, Ohio. And, I think it's just, we love sports.
I imagine, like you said, though, that just that constant, it's not a push or an expectation, but it's just, you guys are all pushing each other, right?
Family activity.
Right.
Yeah, that's my earliest memories are, you know, playing mixed doubles with my mom against my dad and
really?
Sister, yeah. Actually, there might be one before that, fishing. But
that's different. Yeah. That's different. That's just a relaxation situation.
Right.
Was there ever any doubt you were going to Ohio State?
Yeah, it was not a predetermined thing for me. I had some visits scheduled right when I was deciding, and what it came down to was I felt really confident in the coaching staff at Ohio State. It's a great establishment, the university. I always had fun going up for games and stuff like that. Talked to a lot of people that went there in the past. They're like, you're going to have everything you need. Mm. To get better, got to stay close to home.
Yeah.
My dad was having treatments at the cancer hospital at Ohio State, so that was a big deal for me, knowing he would get to watch me play. My mom doesn't fly as well.
Okay, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Stanford was very high up on the list, and I knew it would have been hard for my family to watch me play. But in the end, I just really connected with the coaches and the team, and yeah, I love Ohio State, obviously.
You obviously do, and I've never gotten to ask an Ohio State athlete this question. I've known Ty Tucker, head coach there. It's been 20 years, JJ, since when I started at Illinois, and you know he was just starting to make his mark against Craig Tiley at Illinois, and it, like, there was a hatred. I know he hated Craig. There was a level of respect, but and he always came in, and for people who don't know, like he wears his sweatpants, he's got that paper folded in the front pocket, and I always found myself thinking, this is a football coach who coaches tennis. What makes him special? What brings out the best in his athletes? And then the second part of that is, with all that and how well you guys have been pushed, why hasn't there been a national championship?
I'll try to answer that as best I can, but I think it's a lot of the intangibles with Ty. Like, I don't think when we're on the court, like, you've seen some of the practices, it's more like you're a competitor. It's not like you're a tennis player. All right, we're going to hit cross courts until you feel good. It's no, you're going to hit the ball as hard as you can. You're going to be as energetic as you can. You're going to pump up your teammates, and you're going to, you know, rip the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like everything's with high intensity. If you're slacking, you're going to get called out.
Yes.
So you're expected to keep the level high, and I think that's due to Ty. You know, if he didn't bring the energy, I don't think the team would bring as much energy. So I think that gave me a little confidence when we were playing. I always thought we were a little intimidating.
Yeah.
Some of the other teams would probably be a little cleaner and more professional looking, but
yeah.
We would come out and be doing sprints before the match. And
yes.
I think people would see that.
So why hasn't it happened in May?
You know, I think we've come close multiple times.
Yes.
But, you know, going back to my sophomore year, we're playing Wake Forest at Wake Forest. We're playing that match at Ohio State. How do you think it goes?
Yes.
You know, it's tough. We'd play maybe 3-4 outdoor matches a year before that tournament, which makes it hard. But, yeah, I think they'll get one soon. I thought this year they had a good shot.
I thought this year was it, especially after the quarters.
Yeah.
Having being there in Champaign last week, I really thought after the quarters, how everything shook out, I was like, this is as good as it's going to get.
I kind of have the feeling, though, once they get one, they'll get two, and they'll get three, and they'll get four. Like, I think it's coming. You know, they've so many amazing players that have been in and out of Ohio State. They've been close so many times. But, yeah, I think if there was an easy answer for this,
yeah,
would have figured it out by
yeah.
now.
I mean, having been at Illinois, and like I remember in 03, you were three, something like that. But I remember how special that was because it just doesn't happen for Big Ten Midwest schools. It was, it's so hard. It's so hard to get players up in Ohio State at Illinois. I mean, you've got some great ones, but it's hard to maintain. So it's a special level. You come out of college, and my first recollections of you on tour, JJ, are you were wearing White Claw shirts all over. You had the hair was growing. What was that first experience like? Because you came out, kind of like a frat boy mentality of just like, you know, kind of enjoying life and enjoying just being out there. What were those first few months like for you?
Are we talking before I left school or after?
After.
After. Yeah, it was a big transition for me. You know, playing pro tennis had always kind of been on my mind.
Yeah.
But once you turn pro, it's kind of like, you know, a little bit more pressure's on.
Yeah.
When you're playing and you're in school, there's kind of like that. You're not expected to do anything.
Yes.
And if you do, there's extra bonuses. But after I left, you know, I think it took me a couple months to kind of get used to it. I was missing my friends in college a little bit, but yeah, I just tried to go out and realize how much I had to work on. Once you keep climbing the different levels of pro tennis, you realize how much better everyone is than you.
Yeah.
And what you need to work on. And that's what I think makes it fun. So I'm like, you go to a tournament, there's something to work on after it every single time, whether you win it or not.
Your travel coach, Patrick, said to me, I think during the green clay stretch a few months ago, he said that what he's appreciated about you is it's constantly been development. It may not be the big jump necessarily, but he said, you know, I was talking about that very thing, you wearing the White Claw shirt and all that at the beginning, and now you can just continue to see this level of professionalism. Why has that been important for you to get to that point where you are, I don't know, that full professional, that business-like atmosphere?
Yeah, you know, at the start, I think I was kind of taking that more relaxed mentality towards it. Like, you know, if you win, cool. If you lose, cool. But now I'm just kind of throwing all of the safety nets away. Like, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to do it as hard as I can. And, yeah, I don't really want any backdrops or anything. I don't think you're going to succeed if you've got something to fall back on. So I think that's kind of the difference for me lately. I've been trying to take care of my body a lot more, listen to my coaches better. yeah, just, you know, get off the TikTok maybe a little bit and the Instagram and try to just kind of focus on working.
With that said, though, I mean, you're doing My Tennis Life. Mm-hmm. It's been very entertaining. I've actually really enjoyed it because I think it's, having seen a lot of them over the last couple of years, like you, it seems like it's really your personality. It's not a show for you, right? This is like you're trying to give people an actual insight into who you are, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't think there's really any point in putting on a facade for anybody. I don't think they want to see that. But, yeah, I've tried to give a pretty good representation of what goes on in my life. But definitely been hard. A lot of my buddies have moved out. So that's, mm-hmm. like, the biggest thing for me is my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so close with them, and they mean the world to me. So I think last year would have been pretty cool to see, too. We'd be doing more stuff like, you know, going down the river, fly fishing, just kind of hanging out and doing stuff like that. But they'll be in and out of the videos here and there.
Was did I see Banchilla?
Oh yeah,
Alex Banchilla was on.
He always
last
sneaks
one?
Down to Columbus from Cleveland when he's home.
And I know you've been very close with Alex Kovacevic and trained with him at times. And some of the Miami experiences. I think the fact that you are incorporating players kind of at this who have been challenger regulars over the last couple of years as you've been moving up as well and having that Miami experience, Indian Wells, I think that's been really something that's been missing. Why has that been important for you to make sure you include them as part of My Tennis Life?
Yeah, because I mean when you're out here, if it's just you alone, it's going to be pretty lonely. Yeah. So, you know, I try to hang out with some of the guys, and especially with all the good Americans around my age and stuff like that, even not around my age, I think we kind of help each other.
Your play style, I described it a year or two ago when somebody had me on a podcast, and I said this is like kind of like John Daly was back in the day, and that's an old school name, but like there was that idea of grip it and rip it, see ball, hit ball. Obviously it has developed for you over the last couple of years. Where do you think you're at in terms of what you're trying to do, how you're trying to impose yourself on a tennis court, say now versus 2 years ago? Where's that biggest jump?
You know, I think if we look back at 2 years ago, I was playing pretty good tennis, won a couple of tournaments in a row, pretty good US Open. But I think I was kind of trying to test what I could do with the ball striking. I was ripping it. And I think I had found a level that wasn't necessarily sustainable or
Why?
Smart. I think I was just, you know, going for too much a lot of the times. Like, if I was feeling good, sometimes it would be hard for the other guy to get into the match. But if I wasn't, there was no really plan B. And I think I'm kind of trying to work on, you know, a more physical, you know, bigger target, more safety, but still hitting it you know, as hard as I want type game style. It's still evolving right now, but I'll have those days where I feel good and I want to hit it as hard as I can. And I'll have days where, you know, I want to hit the ball 4 or 5 feet over the net with more spin.
Yeah, that idea of sustainable is something I don't think we in the media necessarily talk about very much, and you don't hear players talking about that too often, but that's really important, isn't it? That kind of that bigger target so that it just that repetition is there more often.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple ways to look at it. Some guys they'll say you're always 1 week away from a great year on tour.
Yeah.
You can have 10-match losing streak and then play two good tournaments and you're fine. But my goal isn't to play like that. I kind of want to have more consistency and, you know, I guess just want to impose myself every tournament I play. So I don't want to be seen as someone who could win the tournament or lose in the first round.
I kind of want to
be.
Yeah, that seems like, the idea of like consistently being in the weekend, you know, you're going to have more of those opportunities to make that big point jump, that big dollar jump. I mean, that's kind of the whole process, right?
Right.
I want to end here, JJ. You and I think we've had a friendly relationship over the years. So you hit the left-handed forehand against Tsitsipas in Miami, and I'm working for Tennis TV. I didn't get to tell you about this afterwards, but they asked me to come do the social media thing with you, and unfortunately it was right after you lost the match, and I know you were struggling. And... Yep. I come over and I have the two Tennis TV people with me, and you say to me, I remember this, you say, what the fuck do you want? Because I think, again, we've had a good enough relationship, and the two people behind me were just like, oh my God, what's wrong? But what stuck out about that to me is that I've grown to appreciate your viewpoint on life and your viewpoint on tennis. And it seems like you're in a pretty good headspace about how you're continuing to progress. How do you maintain that so that you are consistently able to improve and you don't have those downswings? Because here on our podcast, we talk a lot about that idea of that mental health of you do lose almost every week here on tour. How have you, over the last several months since returning from injury, gotten to that point where you are at that pretty good space of having that slow and steady progression?
You know, my team's just really come together and tried to help me a lot with this, but there'll still be downswings no matter what. I don't think I'm going to be able to just, you know, stay in a great headspace all the time. But me being able to reach out, one of my coaches, Matthew Vaughn, I trust him a lot, and I know I can come to him with kind of anything if I'm struggling with stuff like that. So just kind of having better open communication, because I've kind of kept things in the past, and it just like boils up. You know, when you're out here, you need to be free flowing and talking with your team and everything. So that's kind of helped me do some reading and some work, not just wake up and see how you feel, but try to do what you can to make yourself feel good. But yeah, that's important to me, is more so the communication and being open with my team.
I appreciate it very much, and I hope you continue to swear at me over the next several years whenever we meet.
Because I think I gave you a handshake after that.
You did, yes. Like for me, like I kind of
like a little bro hug there.
Yeah, it was totally fine. Like, but I appreciated it, and I really do appreciate this time because, listen, I know you've got your like 20th battle with Alex Kovacevic later tonight.
It's gotta be.
It's a lot. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.